Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to the wonderful Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Very nice of you to say that about me. I'm very chuffed.
Oh, it's lovely to see you every week.
I'm very well.
That's great. Now, Dennis, for the last few sessions, you've been looking at factors of lifestyle and the particular foods and supplements that are able to improve resistance to wintertime ailments. Mm. Today you want to deal with two medicinal herbs that you recommend on specifically for resisting colds, influenza and other conditions for wintertime ailments. First, you want to talk about non-specific enhancement of resistance.
Big term, isn't it?
I know, as described by the late German medical practitioner and medical herbalist, Dr. Rudolf Weiss.
A lovely man, and I've referred to his literature, as listeners probably know, for many, many years. And I've mentioned him today because in his book on herbal medicine, from which I've lectured for very many years, he uses the term non-specific enhancement of resistance, and he applies that to the way in which some herbs, but in particular the herb echinacea, has a profound and well-known effect on improving or enhancing the overall resistance to infection, particularly those infections that occur during wintertime, viral infections, colds, an influenza. And what the term simply means, it sounds as though it's a big term, but what it simply means is, look, herbs play a role in improving the overall resistance of the body to common ailments that occur, particularly influenza and colds. And in his section, he makes a remarkable statement, and then I'll pause. He says, medicinal plants have a rich and varied potential for increasing resistance, quite generally. We shall have to continue to make good use of them. With ordinary colds and influenza, it has now become the rule not to give antibiotics immediately, but to try and manage them with simple measures for as long as possible. In the vast majority of cases, this will be sufficient. And as a result of that, he leads us in to discuss the herbs, particularly which he had a lot to do with in Germany, making famous, but particularly the herb echinacea, which we'll spend a bit of time looking at today as one of the so-called specifics for dealing with those conditions which occur in this terribly cold weather.
And it has been cold.
It has.
Now, Dennis, even though the herb echinacea is a North American herb, its reputation and medical use has been largely associated with its use and promotion in Germany.
Correct.
Isn't that puzzling?
Look, it might sound puzzling, but what we have to realise is that Europeans have been raised on natural medicine, and Germany in particular has a worldwide reputation for its blending of plant-based medicine, that is herbal medicine, with mainstream medicine. It's not incongruous in Germany and other European countries for a practitioner of mainstream medicine to also incorporate natural medicine, particularly herbal or homeopathic medicine. The scientific mind of the Germans, perhaps, or their natural affinity for natural medicine has allowed them to take this famous and popular North American herb. Not to say that it hadn't been used in America, been used there for centuries. The American Red Indians used it for their medicinal purposes, and the whites used it. But it has been on the continent that, in my opinion, the herb has made its best reputation as a result of a lot of scientific investigation as to how it works, essentially, in what Dr. Rudolf Weiss referred to as non-specifically improving or enhancing one's resistance to infection. We would say in, how can you call it, technical terms, that it has an immunosupportive or immunostimulant role. And so as a result of that, this herb has stormed the world, particularly the Western world, and particularly in English-speaking countries, where we as herbalists always use the herb, but at a time when it was nowhere near as popular as it is now. It has now become, in my opinion, the leading example of Western herbal medicine. And, you know, when I started my lecturing and practicing many, many years ago, we all knew about echinacea. I knew a lot about it and began to use it and teach it to my undergraduates and subsequently to my graduate students. But interestingly, I had the privilege, and it was a great privilege, of taking on board a well-known professor of physics from this university. When he retired from the university, he sought me out at his little farm in Peach Orchard Road, Erimba, and asked me if I would help him grow herbs, and he wanted to learn herbal medicine from me. As a result, I developed almost a father and son relationship with this wonderful man, and we actually grew Echinacea purpurea in a brilliant way on his small farm in Peach Orchard Road. He and his dear wife were New Zealanders, and I argue to this day that New Zealanders have green fingers like no one else on the planet, and so they turned that little plot, with my help, into a demonstration garden, and I was on board when a representative of a leading American company, an American herb company, sought me out and asked me if I could show him around, and I took him down to the professor's farm. He was so impressed with our growing echinacea that he wanted to buy it all, but wanted us to buy more. And of course, we were only amateurs at that stage. But to an extent, we then, in my opinion, became leaders in the world, the English-speaking world certainly, in harnessing the herb commercially, and with a company that I was associated with on the Darling Downs at Toowoomba, we grew echinacea commercially there to a large extent and converted the product into a well-known health food store product. So I had the privilege very early in my career of getting to know about the herb, prescribing it to my patients with great results, particularly with kids' results, great results, teaching it and even manufacturing from it, and also, of course, having the privilege of working with the dear professor at his farm. I miss him greatly.
Oh, well, it was a great story.
I have to write it one of these days. Some of my people that listen to this program, they pick it up all around the place. Some of them are my ex-students, and they keep saying to me, look, when are you going to write your book? You've been saying this for ages and ages and ages. And I say, well, I'm nearly there, but I'm a fair way from it, to be honest with you.
Maybe do an audio book and you can just talk.
Well, that's a good point. But that is how this remarkable herb, which, by the way, I have grown also in my bit of dirt at Rothbury, hard country, but I've actually grown Echinacea pallida there with great success. But if you want to be a farmer, you have to be dedicated, and you can't be a teacher, you can't be a practitioner, you can't be a father and all those things and look after plants. So my little experiment, successful as it was, withered on the vine because of the time demands. But again, I say to listeners out there, many of whom I know are interested in growing herbs. I've picked that up over the years. I would say to some listeners that have a small acreage, look, don't overlook the potential of growing the herb echinacea, particularly a purpurea, which is one species, or more importantly, angustifolia. There is a market for it. It should be grown here. Unfortunately, we still import all the herb for our use here. The New Zealanders still grow it and do well. I've lectured on the growing of it all around Australia. But unfortunately, we have not yet established, as far as I'm aware, a serious take-up of the possibilities of growing this remarkable herb. Listeners, take on board. There's a hint here. There's money to be made in echinacea.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll continue talking about echinacea shortly. And, Dennis, we've been talking about echinacea.
Yes.
How is it used in addressing influenza or colds?
A very good question. Echinacea can be used in a number of ways. For a number of years, I've said on this program that for people that year by year ritualistically go down with serious colds or even influenza, echinacea should be taken in low preventative or protective dosages. I believe in a liquid form is probably the best, but you can also use it in a capsule form. I believe it should be taken preventatively or prophylactically, as we would say, with the view of lessening the onset of the virus, or if it occurs, for the virus to be better managed by the improvement in the body's resistance, non-specific enhancement of the immune system. But Dr. Weiss tells us in his remarkable work, Herbal Medicine, which I've recommended for years on this program to serious students of herbal medicine, as being probably the best work available on what you call might call a medical approach to herbal medicine. But in his book, he talks about beginning to use it in accelerated small dosages with the onset, say, of a cold or influenza, at the first sign that the cold is asserting itself or an influenza is starting to occur. Dr. Weiss recommends the taking of small, regular dosages as soon as the symptoms occur and spreading them over the day, every couple of hours, to take a liquid preparation, ideally much more easily taken, every couple of hours to take a mil or so of the liquid extract of Echinacea as a means of lessening the severity of the episode and lessening its length. Now, the available literature does support the claim and the observation that used this way, particularly at the onset of the first symptoms, using it, taking it across the day in regular smaller dosages, the literature certainly supports the contention that it lessens the severity and the length of the episode. So if you're a person who frequently gets a cold or is prone to influenza, in my opinion, you could be missing out on a great virtue by not having some echinacea in your so-called medicine chest, even perhaps starting to take, albeit winter's nearly over, starting to take a preventative dose in liquid form with it ready to accelerate over a couple of days in small dosages if the symptoms occur. Don't limit, however, the role of echinacea just to colds. It can be used effectively also in helping manage a severe influenza. Now, I'm not opposed to the medical use in any way at all for what we call the flu vaccine. I don't have them, but I've got nothing against it whatsoever. And I say to patients, particularly elderly patients, that are prone to wintertime distress and influenza episodes, who may also have other complicating conditions, be guided by your GP, your doctor, in what you should do, and the flu vaccine may be a good thing for you to contemplate. But having said that, there is no conflict by having the vaccine and also using the benefits of echinacea. That's the point that Dr. Weiss makes. There is no competition. All that we're talking about here is the role of natural medicine, plant-based medicine, well-defined and documented, used sensibly to augment and reinforce the approach that the mainstream brings to bear on it. And just as during COVID, I believe the use of herbs had a significant effect on lessening the seriousness, the activity, the length of COVID, just as herbs, particularly echinacea and astragalus, demonstrated great value in that climate in my prescribing. So echinacea should be seen as a valuable adjunct to whatever other medication your good GP might prescribe, as something that will not conflict, well-defined, look at the literature, Google it. If you are a practitioner even of the mainstream, look at what's available. You can prescribe it in conjunction with other things that you're prescribing, and it will lift the game. Undoubtedly, in my opinion, after 50 years, I'm allowed to say that it will lift the game of a general practitioner who is prepared to give credit to the historical virtue of the herb echinacea.
There you go. Put some echinacea in your pantry. And we've got Eve from Williamtown on the line. Thanks for holding, Eve. How can we help you?
Oh, hi. I just want to ask Dennis. I had a very quick onset of peripheral neuropathy in my feet, and it's it's very unpleasant. It sort of went from 0 to 100 almost, and I just wondered if there's any sort of herbal anti-inflammatory type, treatment that he can suggest that I could take.
Okay.
Because I'm finding that taking Nurofen and things like that is actually helpful.
Okay.
But I don't want to take too much of that because of the issues with gut issues.
Okay.
I was wondering if there's anything he could suggest.
Let me ask you a few questions, Eve. You're talking about neuropathy.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's peripheral neuropathy, which means you have lost sensation or feeling in your feet.
Well, it's sort of more it's quite painful.
Okay, that was puzzling me, because you then went on to say that you were using some anti-inflammatories and they were giving you some benefit, albeit you're a bit worried about them. Look, as far as dealing with what seems to be more of an inflammatory condition, I'll make a couple of suggestions. Now, if you're being treated by your GP, it's ethical and correct to let him know what you're doing. What I would suggest you contemplate is using what are called circulatory stimulants, the most important one being an encapsulated preparation of cayenne. Now, cayenne is a very warming herb, and that's why I suggest that it's probably easier for you to take as a capsule. A capsule, mm-hmm. taking one capsule after each meal. And what does it do? As a peripheral circulatory stimulant, it over a period of time will improve the circulation to the feet. And I've had people on this program who have vouched for the fact that even using that approach has helped their neuropathy. Now, I'm not going to enter into the debate on that, because medically that's a big call. But where there are symptoms of coldness indicating poor circulation, the use of cayenne as a circulatory stimulant has some value, and I would recommend you think about that. As far as looking at some pain-relieving or analgesic or anti-inflammatory effects, again here, don't ever overlook the oldest well-known plant-based analgesic and anti-inflammatory that medicine is known of, and that is the willow bark. Now, willow bark comes, again, in various forms. I prescribe it regularly, usually with the herb curcumin, two of my most favourite herbs for mild inflammatory conditions. I would use some of that in conjunction with cayenne, as far as seeking to palliate or manage some of these symptoms that you're experiencing, coldness and some degree of pain. Coldness with cayenne or in any preparation, and also reinforced by some willow bark. I think that's not a bad start, but only time would tell. Both of those herbs are inexpensive, readily available, and in my opinion, very safe.
And how do you take the willow bark?
It comes as an encapsulated or a tableted preparation. You can take it as a dried herb. I'm a great proponent at this stage of my career in trying to get people to realise that herbs have always been used as a basic water-based preparation, a decoction or an infusion. And the way in which the cost of natural medicine is going, we'll have to get back to simpler forms of using the herb. So if you can get hawthorn berry as a dried herb, I'm sorry, if you get willow bark as a herb, a dried herb, you can make a tea of it. But outside of that, it's readily available as tablets or an encapsulated preparation. I'd give that a go, because some of what you said implied that there was an inflammatory phenomenon occurring there. and some coldness, those two simple herbs, and they are simple and inexpensive, might give you a a bit of a hand.
Oh, thank you. It's funny you mentioned hawthornberry because that was the next question.
I saw it on the board, Eve. I saw it on the board.
Yeah, because ever since I heard you talking about it a couple of years ago, I started taking it because I've got a family history of cardiac issues.
I take it every morning.
Now, a couple of earlier on in the year, my doctor insisted that I go on a statin because my cholesterol was too high. I didn't want to, but she insisted. I've continued taking hawthornberry as well as the statin, but I wanted to ask you, is it okay for me to take both?
Hawthornberry, as far as I'm aware, is one of the safest of herbs. It has no chemistry like the statin whatsoever. And there would be many, many of my patients and listeners who would be on statins. And by the way, I'm not a fan of statins, but that's another point.
No, I'm not either.
Hawthornberry, interestingly, has a history of being a valuable agent in helping the blood vessels remain healthy. In fact, I could see it as a good appendage to what your good doctor has prescribed. So I couldn't see anything the matter whatsoever. Interestingly, one of its most important properties is to an extent, move along the same lines as digitalis does. It's not a digitalis herb, but it tends to support the heart. Remember, as Dr. Weiss again, in his book that referred to hawthornberry as the herb for the aging heart. That's why I take it at 120 years of age. Now I'm not, but that's why I take it every morning, and I take another of the tablet at night because I'm a firm believer in it, and my family history is one of cardiovascular distress. So I think that's a great support. Tell it to your GP. I'd like to see medicine take it on board a lot more than what it does.
Thanks very much, Eve. Good luck with that. Okay, next on the line we have Surin from Wilston in Queensland. Thanks for holding.
Oh, thank you, Dennis, for taking my call.
Thank you.
Just want to ask you a couple of questions on echinacea.
Yes.
What age of the children we can give echinacea as a preventive and as a treatment during the flu?
Okay.
And the second question is, whether it will be fluid extracted or alcohol extracted is better for adult dosing.
Okay. As far as your first question is concerned, when I was a much younger practitioner, my practice on the Central Coast was heavily populated with young people, particularly children.
Yep.
I remember well recommending it in drop dosages of a liquid extract for kids that had things like glue ear, upper respiratory tract catarrhal conditions, runny nose, perennial coughs and colds that many of them picked up from daycare. And that was a popular prescription, and I believe it helped many kids go through that early stage. I was reluctant to prescribe it to children earlier than that because I'm not a paediatrician, I'm not a GP, but to be honest, I can see no reason why, in the correct dosage, in the correct hands of a competent practitioner, it couldn't work very, very well indeed. And I dare say that there are some of my graduates over the years who are medical practitioners who are treating kids, young kids, that are using it in a liquid form, in attenuated dosages, getting the same results that I got. I only recommend that to medical practitioners. I keep saying that I'm not a paediatrician and I don't recommend to persons other than medical practitioners the use of herbal medicine unless it is stipulated by their GP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your second question was, how was the echinacea extracted?
Now, which one is better to use,
fluid
extracted or alcohol extracted? Because I come across very nice company, Australia-based, MediHerb.
Yes, I know the company well.
They do alcohol extract 1:1 echinacea.
Yeah, I know them very well, and they are, in my opinion, an outstanding representative of herbal manufacturing in this country. I use the products myself. Yep. Their extracts are excellent. I know how they're made, the technique. If you're using their product, I would see that you're on a very good position, put it that way, Surin.
Yeah, and on that, their product, the echinacea, come in 2-3 different forms.
Yes.
One is having only echinacea purpura.
Yes.
Other got mixture of purpura and angustifolia.
Yes. Okay. When I started practice many years ago, echinacea angustifolia was the only echinacea extract that was used in Australia. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, because of the difficulty that was had in growing angustifolia in Australia, purpurea began to become much more popular. And in fact, I had a lot to do with a company that was based in Toowoomba in helping them get a product range based on echinacea purpurea into the marketplace. And it was a very successful product.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, there was a general move by companies and practitioners towards purpurea because of the cost and scarcity of angustifolia. Now, I'm not sure that is the situation. I personally believe that both species have proven themselves to be of great value, the only difference being that echinacea purpurea tends to emphasise a lot more of the flowering parts than echinacea angustifolia does. Years ago, I produced a product myself, which I called Tri-Echinacea, which had the three species, pallida, angustifolia and purpurea in it. I would favour, only because of my experience using a blend, that a blend of purpurea and angustifolia, in my opinion, would be a very useful combination of the two herbs.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dennis.
It's a pleasure. Thanks
for your call, sir, and appreciate it. Now, Dennis, you often mention the Chinese herb known as astragalus as a remarkable agent in supporting the immune system. How does it compare with echinacea?
Oh, that's a very good question. That's a very good question.
Thank you.
I'll put it this way. Astragalus is, as I've said, and as I've mentioned on this program, a remarkable agent in supporting the immune system. But the difference, I would say, my opinion is that astragalus is for people that have had a much more problematical history of recurrent infections or who are suffering from serious medical conditions that have debilitated their immune systems, have debilitated their resistance mechanisms. And you see a lot of people like that. So an elderly patient that's frightened of wintertime and has had a history of serious health problems, that's the sort of person that I would argue needs to discuss with their doctor or natural therapist going on to astragalus, which is immune supportive agent for more compromised immune systems in people that, for instance, have symptoms of lingering COVID, for people that are still battling to get over Epstein-Barr virus, for people that have weird, complicated conditions that have run down their resistance. Astragalus is more associated with that level of requirement, helping resistance with a herb that works much more deeply and is used, in my opinion, for much more ongoing, chronic conditions that are reluctant to do well with the mainstream. Astragalus there, in my opinion, is the herb of choice, albeit echinacea can be used in conjunction with it, particularly to be used at the onset, say, of a flu or a respiratory virus or a cold. Brilliant remedy. Where would we be without astragalus today? I have probably done more to promote its benefit as a remedy to treat deep-seated immunological problems than any other natural therapist. So there's no competition. One represents, Echinacea represents probably the best in Western herbalism for addressing appropriate conditions that we've discussed today. Astragalus represents the best, in my opinion, in Asian medicine for treating very deep-seated and problematical health profiles.
Well, we've covered a lot today, haven't we, Dennis?
We have. I thought it was going to be a bit too technical, but I think we've got through very well.
We have. We've done well. And, yeah, we'll catch up with you next week to talk about more health naturally.
We will. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.